All right, so we are holding on Pei Ches on the days 9 lines from the bottom. We're talking over here about weights and measures. We learned in the Mishnah about various details and various details, which we'll learn much more about in the Gemara, about the details of how you have to measure out things and give the customer a little extra, and so on and so forth. So we're in the middle of... We had Evan Shlaim of a Tzedek, Tzedek Mishocha of a Tzedek. When you have honest weights, Evan Shlaim of a Tzedek, that you have an honest and a full weight stone or other thing for measuring, for weighing with, you still need Tzedek Mishocha of a Tzedek. You still need to give him a little bit extra. Okay, so we started talking, the first thing we said, the last thing we learned yesterday was the first thing that Rav Levi had said is that in a way the punishment for midos, for false midos, is worse even than the punishment for arayos. We said not the actual punishment itself. Arayos is karis, midos is only allowed, but in the sense that arayos is possible to do tshuva for full tshuva and midos. Fine, but even then you do whatever you're supposed to, as opposed to midos, not really, because how are you going to return to all the people that you took from? Okay, so that's where we're holding. It's still not necessarily going to go to those people. Pechas on the base, 9 lines.
People were there for one day in the city.
Va'amarabli, kosha gezel hedyet yoisme gezel gavoya. Similarly, in this connection, gezel from a hedyet, from an ordinary person, is stronger, more serious than stealing from the Eivishter. Shezeh hektim chet l'me'ilu, v'zeh hektim me'ilu l'chet. Because you have in Pechas on the base, 9 lines from the bottom. Yeah. In Parshas Vayikra, the Torah describes, talks about Me'ilah, where a person uses something from Hekdesh that they shouldn't have. The Torah starts off by saying Nefesh, the Pasuk starts off by saying Mo'ala Mal, that the person commits Me'ilah, and then it continues that he was Choyte, that he sinned by doing that. Nefesh kisimo mal v'chata b'shgaga is the expression. So like first comes the me'ilah. When does he become a choyte? Only when he's actually committed the me'ilah. As opposed to when it comes to a hedyet, then it says the other way around. Nefesh kisechta u'mol amal b'ashem. Like the sin has been committed even before the me'ilah, the misusing of the thing has been done. So that's shazeikim chet me'ilah v'zeikim me'ilah l'chet. When it comes to a hedyet, me'ilah just means like changing, like using it for the wrong purpose. But that in and of itself, in a certain sense, is not a term of Avera. Chet is a term of Avera, that he committed a sin. So by a hedyet, the Torah puts the word chet first. By gavoya, by hektish, the Torah puts the word me'ilah first, to imply that there's a greater seriousness in stealing from a hedyet than there is from gavoya, from the Eivishter. And Marsha says there's a logical reason behind it, too, because when you get down to it with hektish, when you take something out of the possession of hektish, it's not really, it's still in the Eivishter's possession. Once you use it, that's when you're chayiv in me'ilah, as opposed to a hedyet. As soon as you take it out of his rishos, you're already chayiv. Right.
When you do me'ilah, you're not chayiv until you use it.
Until you use it. With certain rare exceptions, I mean, but in general, yeah.
Okay. So you could steal
not you could steal, but you're not yet chayiv in a chayiv me'ilah. Well, when we learn masechta me'ilah, we'll learn it in detail. That's the shame, but that's the basic idea. You're only chayiv if you had hanah, or you had hanah and you were poigim. You had a na and you damaged the thing. We'll learn. You have to use it. We'll learn the details in the Sefer Me'ilah in a couple of years.
Well, can you be chayav for stealing and for Me'ilah?
No, I don't think so. Okay. V'amar Rav Levi, boyurei shaloi k'midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu midas boss of Adam. Come see that the midah of the Eibishter is not like the midah of a boss of Adam. The Eibishter has more rachmanos than a boss of Adam, even if that boss of Adam is no less than Moshe Rabbeinu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu biruch Yisrael be'etzim ashtayim. The Eibishter, when he benched the Jewish people, benched them with 22 letters. V'kilam b'shemayna, and when he cursed them with 8 letters. What do we mean? Beruchan be'etzim ashtayim. Me'im b'chokoysai ad kemim miyus. You have the brachas in klalos in b'chokoysai. The brachas begin with im b'chokoysai keleichu, with an aleph, and they end with kemim miyus, which ends with a sof. So we see that the brachas go through all 22 letters of the alphabet. When it comes to the klolos, they begin with the im b'chokoysai timasu, which begins with a vav, and it ends with what the last words over there is b'chokoysai golam nafsham. Oh, the Gemara says, yeah. So you have from vav to mem. It's only 8 letters in the alphabet. Vav to mem. Marshall talks about, by the way, the deeper idea behind it. The letters are from Aleph to Tav, obviously representing that it means all
the letters inside it.
No, obviously not. Yeah, but the point is, that symbolically, what's the first and the last. In other words, the idea is that brachas include everything that there could possibly be included. 22 letters. The klolos, Marshall talks about an idea why Dafka these 8 letters from Vav to Mem, and he explains because you have the letters Hey and Nun are the letters in the Aleph Beis that have no benzug. If you pair up the letters, you can pair them to make tens or to make hundreds. Hey and Nun are the only ones that can't pair up with anything else. Therefore, there's simon of Hey, you need another Hey. Nun, you need another Nun. Therefore, they're a symbol of the relationship between the Eibishter and the Jewish people. That's why, for example, you have the pasuk Hein Am Levadav Yishkayin, that Hein represents the uniqueness of the Jewish people, and then the uniqueness of Eibishter.
Adding letters up to make 10.
Aleph goes with Tes, Beis goes with Ches, etc. Each one has a benzug. Hey has no benzug to make 10. Nun has no benzug to make 100. It's only itself, right. So therefore, it represents the idea, like we only join with the Eibishter, and the Eibishter only joins with us. So they put vav to mem are the letters in between that. So like if you don't keep up the unique relationship between you and the Eibishter, then you have vav to mem, which is there.
That is fascinating. And how did he figure this out?
Marsha. How did he figure it out? He had Ruach HaKodesh. It says in Ayim Yim that all the Mechabrim, so the Shach and the Taz wrote with Ruach HaKodesh.
Including
Yeah.
What about the Magen Avraham?
I don't know. Onward. The Ilu Moshe Rabbeinu, Berchan B'Shmoyna B'Kilam B'Esther M'Shtayim. What about Moshe Rabbeinu? The Brachas and Klolos and Kisavai. Now, Kisavai is also part of the Torah, but it's part of Dvarim, which Sefer Dvarim is written in Moshe's own voice. So we know the famous thing, Shchinam and Averis, which has Gronish on Moshe. It's still part of the Torah. So the whole Sefer Dvarim is written in Moshe's voice. So therefore, what it is the well-known thing, that this is the Sicha, where they never talk about it, that Sefer Dvarim is sort of like a... It's sort of like a transition between the other books of Chumash, which are written in the Eibishter's voice, versus the books of Nevi'im and Ksuvim and the later, and then Teresh Baal Peh, which come from their Nevuas, the Ruach HaKodesh or whatever, they come from the Eibishter, but filtered through the mind of the Navi. Sefer Dvarim is sort of like a transition in that. It's spoken in Moshe's words, but Shchinam and Averis, which has greater. The Eibishter is speaking through Moshe's throat.
So it's more than enough.
That's the point. It's more than regular Nevuah. It's still part of the Torah. It's not part of Nevi'im and Ksuvim. But on the other hand, it is written in Moshe Rabbeinu's voice. So therefore, it's, in a certain sense, we can say it's like Moshe Rabbeinu has his own, in a certain sense, it's like his own contribution to it. And therefore, so what do we see in those? It's the other way around. Berchan b'shmoyna v'kilon v'esher m'shtayim. There it's the other way around. The brachas run through only 8 letters. The klolos run through all 22. Berchan b'shmoyna mivahoyim. But in other words, the point is that even in Moshe Rabbeinu, he's quote a boss of Adam, he still has less rachmanos on the choytim than the Eibishter does.
Even though the Eibishter dictated.
No, that's the difference. The first 4 chumashim the Eibishter dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu. The 5th Chumash Devarim is Moshe speaking kind of in his own words, but those words are being fed to him directly by Hashem. So it's not dictation per se, but it's still, there's a certain distinction in it. It's called real time. So again, it starts with a Vav, it ends with a Mem. So there it goes from Vav to Hey. In other words, it's like it's wrapping through. It starts from Vav, going through the entire Aleph phase, and wrapping around to Hey. So Marshall talks about the deeper idea, so Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't do from Aleph to Tav, because he still wants to imply the klolos don't necessarily have to come in order. It's not like there's a law of nature that there have to be klolos at all. And Adarabba, if you do Tshuva, then it'll turn around, like it goes from Vav back to Hey. In other words, then it turns around, and it all becomes Brach.
Klius becomes Klius,
yeah. I was thinking, by the way, as a side thing, I haven't seen this anywhere else, but I was thinking, I think it's very appropriate, I think, that this little vote over here about the 22 letters of the brachos and the 8 letters of the opposite goes in Ar Masechta. 22 times 8 is 176, which is the number of blocks in Ar Masechta. And it is actually right in the middle of the Masechta. This is the middle of this. We're right now in the middle of the Masechta, 88 blocks through 176 of them.
You also have Ruach Kodesh.
I don't. We have, by the way, there's a well known vote about that you have the longest parasha in the Torah is Nosa, 176 psukim. The longest kapitel in Tillim is Kuf Yud Tes, 176 psukim, and the longest in terms of blat, Masechta, is Bava Basra, 176 blat. So there's a certain connection. So it's 22 times 8. So we're mentioning over here the 22 and an 8. You know the Alter Rebbe talks about in Lakuta Torah. It's brought in many places in Chassidus. Even the Klolos that we're talking about over here, the Eberstes, Moshe Rabbeinu's, whatever, are really hidden brachas.
Right.
So altogether, what you really have is 22, and you have 22 times 8 brachas rather than 22 brachas and 8 klolos, or the opposite. Okay. All right. Getting back to the Gemara. Mokum shenagu lomad begasta chola. We said that in the Mishnah, that in a place where the minig is to measure in large amounts, you're not allowed to measure in small amounts, and vice versa. We talked yesterday a couple of possibilities what that means. The Rashbam said, for example, that it means in a place where the minig is to measure by the kav, the you're not allowed to say, you know what, instead of measuring out for you 6 kav individually, I'm just going to measure you out 1 saw. You can't do that because then he's not going to get his extra amounts per kav that he's supposed to get, and vice versa. We said there's a couple of other explanations, but all right. So now we're going to have where the simon ein ma'ainin bein gurchen ba'agardimin of litra shloish of eser nefesh mishkolos nimachet over leisasu layasa. This is a simon for 12 brises that we're going to be bringing, which are going to take up the rest of today's daf, the rest of that paytest, that are going to teach us different dinim about honesty in buying and selling, different details about how the scales are supposed to be made and how the weighing is supposed to be done, and so on and so forth. So, brisa number one. Turn it up on him.
Which method do they say ask you when you go to grind? And
the general question is, did you do business honestly? What's the lashon nasasav and nasasav b'emuna? Yeah, the pashtus that includes all the stuff. Yeah. Okay. Turn it up.
Where did we learn that?
It's in Shabbos. Minayin she'en moichkin makim shegoichin ve'en goichin makim shemoichkin. How do we know that if it's we said in the Mishnah that there are places, for example, that when it comes to the two different ways of you pour stuff into a measuring utensil, there's two different ways of measuring it. You can have that the utensil, let's say, is a saw. You can have it defined as it's a saw when it's flat, when you flatten out, so it's exactly to the rim. Or you can have it hold the saw when it's heaped up. He had two different minhagim. We said that yesterday. So now, how do we know that if it's in a place, the makom shegoichin, a place where the minhag is that you sell in heaped measures, you're not allowed to unheap it. You're not allowed to smooth it out. Even if the Rashbam says, even if the buyer wants to be moichel on it, he says, you know what, I'm going to be moichel, I don't need a heaping saw, I'll be fine with a flat saw. How do we know you're not allowed to do that, or vice versa, van goichin makom shemuskin? No, therefore the pasuk says you have to have a full eifa. In other words, it has to be full. So the point is, in other words, the Rashbam says the problem with it is, fine, this particular buyer and seller, it might not be a problem because, fine, they agreed among themselves. What's going to happen? Other people are going to see that, for example, what's supposed to be, they're going to see that, for example, this amount, let's say, for example, it's a place where you're supposed to be moichik and instead he's goydish, so he's paying him extra. Other people are going to see, they're not going to realize he's paying him extra because it's extra, because it really is extra. They're going to think, okay, around here, a saw costs more than it does in our hometown. Therefore, they're going to end up getting cheated, and vice versa. There's other explanations among the Rishonim also that maybe it's not a problem so much. Maybe it's not so much a problem as that. The Rimigash talks about it's more just you can't unilaterally decide. Yes, if both of them decide ahead of time, the Rimigash says, sure, they can do whatever they want. Not like the Rashbam says. But if you don't agree ahead of time, you can't say, you know what, I can't be bothered to give you a heaping one. I'm just going to give you a flat one.
That's your time.
You can't do that. Yeah. No, obviously we're talking the depending on the shape of the vessel, the heaped amount will hold more or less. The Gemara takes it as a rule of thumb that a heaped utensil will hold 50% more than an unheaped one. So if unheaped, we learn it from the Yamshel Shloimer, that because in one place the pasuk describes it holds 2,000 baht, and in the other place it describes it holds 3,000 baht. So what it is if you were doing it to the rim, it would hold 2,000. If you heaped it up, it would hold 3,000. Rashi, there and Erevin, points out, obviously it depends on the shape of it. The Yamshel Shloimer happened to be a keli that would be of those proportions, or it's a different size proportion than it. Okay. How do we know that, no, if he, even if he says, I'm going to flatten it out, where it's a place where the local minig is to heap it up, and I'm going to actually charge him less, you would think then there's no problem. People are going to see he's charging less. Or the other way around, usually people over here flatten it out, but instead I'm going to give him a heaping measure and charge him more. How do we know that even that is not acceptable? Again, it's not just a matter of you have to have an Eifer Shlema, you have to have a Tzedek, you still have to have that there should be complete honesty over here. Again, the Rashbam says, you want to make sure, what if you have, for example, somebody, one person sees you measuring and then leaves, he passes by, he sees you measuring out a heaping one in the place, you know, in a place where the local minhag is to flatten it out. He's not going to see that extra was paid. He's going to think the local minhag is a cheap stuff, and there's going to be Ramos over here. So we said there's two things. Eifer Shlema is that it has to be whole according to the local minute. But Tzedek adds to that, but beyond that, you have to make sure there's Tzedek as well, that there shouldn't be any possibility of any misunderstanding like that about what the local price is and then measurement systems and whatever are.
So
you have to go according to Minhag HaMakom. Similarly, we said in the Mishnah that also we said that the seller has a responsibility to give a little bit extra to the buyer. And we said in the Mishnah there's two different ways that they did that. In some places the minhag was that they did it using hachra, they would use a balance scale, as we'll see in the Gemara. You put weights on one side of the scale, you put the merchandise on the other and weigh it. So then, in that case, you have to do hachra, which is you have to make sure the side of the merchandise weighs down a little more than the other side of kefah, we said in the Mishnah. It's actually not so much. The Rashbam actually talks about, when we said yesterday that the other way of doing it, we said the other way is you add girumim, you add after the fact, after you measure it, then you add an extra 1% or 0.5% or 0.25%. The Rashbam learns that actually that is the same amount. All it takes is that 1% or whatever to make it dip down by a tefah. It'll depend on the size of the scales, which later on, at the bottom of the Amud, we're going to talk about the proper size and proportions of the scales. But yeah. So you have two different ways. One is called ma'ainin, which is that you make the scales exactly even, ma'ainin meloshin, ayin ba'ayin, like two eyes that are exactly parallel to each other. And then afterwards, you add the girumim after you pour it into the chaos container. No, not a tefach. In that case, then you add his 1% or 0.5% or whatever, like we said yesterday. That's called ma'ining. The other one was machriyin, walachachchila. When you're weighing, you make sure that the side with the meat or the grain or whatever it is you're selling him weighs a little bit more. So, minayin shein ma'ining mokum shmachriyin. How do we know you're not allowed to do ma'ining to make it exactly balanced in a place where the local minag is machriyin, that you're supposed to make a dip down? And you can't do the other way around. Again, talmud loyma even shlema. You have to do, the weights should be complete as they are in this place. Again, like the previous braisa, how do we know we can't even say, let's say, if it's in a place where machriyin, where they usually tilt the scale to make sure that he gets his extra that way, I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to do ma'ainin, I'm going to make it exactly even, and I'll give him his girumim afterwards. I'll give him his extra 1% or whatever afterwards. I'm not going to give him extra. I'll just subtract that from the amount that he should be paying me. Or vice versa, he can say, I'm going to do machria, where the local minhag isn't to do that, and I'll have him pay a little. Sorry, I got that backwards. I'll charge him a little less because he's not going to be getting his extras. Or I'll make it tilt down where the local minhag is not to make it tilt, but rather to give him gerumim afterwards. And I'll charge him a little bit extra. How do we know that also? Shein shleimin lo. That also we don't listen to him. We don't accept that. Again, Talmud Lema Evan Shlema Batzedek. Same idea as before. We want to make sure that nobody's going to make any mistakes about what the local minhag is and what the local prices are and whatever, so that nobody gets cheated. Neither the buyers nor the sellers. They don't use balance scales nowadays. There is no minhag as far as balance scales. The minhag is that whatever the minhag is, what either whatever it says on the package is what you pay, or whatever they weigh on their scales is what you pay.
Because when they do write on the package, they give you exactly 7.1 pounds.
Yeah.
They don't give you extra.
They don't give you extra. So I guess. Because even though we said yesterday it's Xeris HaKosu, if everybody is moichol, I guess that's fine. I mean, if the minhag HaMakom is that everybody is moichol. That's also true, but yeah, okay.
It's a
halacha, but nevertheless, and if a person can always be moichol, if everybody in town is moichol, then fine. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not moichol.
But you don't have to look.
Uh-oh,
okay. You ruined it for the whole
thing. Nobody gives a gerumim as far as I know. All right, onward.
He's going to go collect gerumim.
Okay. Come on, guys. Omen of Yehuda Misura. Okay. Another statement in connection with this dinim about weights and measures. Yehuda Misura says, now the Pasuk says like this, The pasuk says in Parashas Ki Tse, Lo yilocha b'kischa evan v'evan. You're not allowed to have in your pocket or your money bag or whatever one stone and another stone, meaning two different weighing stones that supposedly are the same amount, but really they weigh different amounts. You're not allowed to do that. That's cheating. And similar, the pasuk says, Lo yilocha b'beischa eifa v'eifa. You're not allowed to have in your house two different eifas, two different measurements that supposedly are each an eifa, but again, one is smaller than the other. Now, why does the pasuk have to say Lo yilocha in both cases? So, Lo yilocha b'beischa, the pasuk is also coming to give us a drasha. You won't have anything in your house. Lo yilocha b'beischa. You won't have anything in your house. In other words, you'll become poor. Matam, why would that happen? Mishum eifa v'eifa. If you have an eifa v'eifa, if you have dishonest weights like that in your house, then you deserve to lose all your money. Similarly, when it says lo yilocha b'kischa, earlier in the previous passage it says you shouldn't have in your pocket or in your bag or whatever, but also lo yilocha means there won't be for you in your pocket. Same idea. Matam, why won't you have anything in your pocket? Mishum evan v'evan, because you had dishonest weights. Aval, but as the pasuk continues, even shlema v'tzedek yiyaloch. As the pasuk then continues, a full weight weighing stone and an honest weighing stone yiyaloch, you will have efa shlema v'tzedek yiyaloch. A full and honest efa you will have, implying that if you have those things, if you have honest weights and measures yiyaloch, then you will have the Eibishter will bench you with the Eibishter will bench you.
Isn't it interesting that yiyaloch is after?
That's the point.
That's the point. Because you have the Evan Shlomo Vatzedek, therefore you. Because as soon as you have it for Kischa, already we'll learn on other days, even to just have dishonest weights and measures, right, even if you don't use them, is already an Isser. There's a whole Sicha where the Rebbe talks about it in Parshas Kedoshim, that the Rambam writes that a person who is kofir in the dinim of midas and mishkalos is like he denies Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the Rebbe analyzes in detail over there why is that. The gist of it is that a person like that is saying that now we're saying that just having such dishonest weights and measures is already an isser, just because like you already have the capability, you already have the thought of doing something wrong, even if you didn't actually do the gzeila yet. So a person who doesn't believe in that is like, say, so then in that case, what's the basis for Yetzias Mitzrayim? That was the whole problem with the Mitzrayim, after all. The Eibishter said we're going to be in Mitzrayim, ba'avodim ve'inoisim. Why are the Mitzrayim punished, and why with 10 makas and all? Because they weren't doing it because the Eibishter said so. They're doing it for their own selfish reasons. So if a person doesn't believe in midas and mishkalos, he doesn't believe that the Eibishter cares about my thoughts, he only cares about my ma'asim, effectively he's saying, and there's no basis for Yetzias Mitzrayim. So that, maybe that's the vort then. Maybe the yiyalacha comes first. In that case, to point out, as soon as he has it, the kischa, already lo yiyalach, then already he deserves the.
Are you actually saying that the first time Moshe Rabbeinu went to Paro and Paro had freed the Jewish people, they would not have been makas?
Apparently not. Okay, let's continue.
That's a big chiddush.
Okay. Turn it up on him. The pasuk says lo yiyalach, or yiyalach, whatever, melamed shemamidin agardim in lamidus. This is what the pasuk is saying, yiyalach, besides your huyohod v'sudas drasha, on the simple reading of it, there should not be for you dishonest weights. So measures implies that there's a response, it's not just your own personal responsibility, it implies that there's a responsibility on the tzibur. Melamed shemamidin agardim in lamidus. So that teaches us that based in is responsible to appoint agardim in charge of measures. A gardimin basically means market inspectors. Apparently it comes from a Greek word, agora nomos, or something like that. Agora means a market, like an agoraphobic, because somebody was afraid of being out in public. And then nomos means law. So in the Gemara, it becomes a gardimin. So you have to appoint a gardimin for midos. The inmamin a gardimin l'sharim. However, you're not obligated, Basin is not obligated to set up a gardimin as far as prices. You'd think maybe you have to control prices, make sure people don't jack up the prices. No, we're saying you're not obligated, Basin is not obligated to do that, because the Rashbam says it's a logical thing. If one guy decides to jack up the prices, so what? Everybody else will undersell him and he'll go out of business, or he'll have to lower his prices. So Basin doesn't have to worry about that.
Not the word also.
What? Again, I don't know, maybe. Right. Okay. So.
Wait, below the
shard. Below the shard, yeah. However, Dvei Nesia Ukimu Agadimin Bain Lamidis Bain Lasharim. However, the family of the Nasi, or the household of the Nasi, I guess meaning the Reish Kavusa in this case, because it took place in Bavel, one time appointed Agadimin both for Midos and for Sharim, both for weight, to make sure that everybody has honest weights and measures, and for prices, that nobody is selling at too high a price. Amale Shmuel Lakauna. So Shmuel tells Kauna, no, don't allow them. Puk Tony Lahu. Go teach them that the truth is, like we just said, Ma'minin Agadim and Midas, Vein Ma'minin Agadim Lashorim. They don't need Agadim in for the prices. Let the market find its own price.
Sounds like Trump instead of.
Come on. Nafak Dora. Come on. When we're learning Torah over here, it's not time to bring in Shtusi. Nafak Dora Shlahu. So instead, Kauna went out and darshened to them. No, ma'midin agadim and bein lamidus bein l'shorim. No, as a matter of fact, we do establish agadim for prices as well. So he told them basically, what you're doing is the right thing. Don't listen to what Shmuel is saying. So this is Kauna. Kauna is one of the Amidoy. We have him in a number of places in Chas.
He was Masada Brayus.
Omalei Mashimcha.
Press control.
Shmuel says to Kauna, what's your name? Like, he doesn't know what his name is, but like he's saying sarcastically, like what kind of person do you think you are? He says, Kauna. In that case, typically Kauna Be'ene. In that case, you deserve that a horn should grow in your eye. Naskal Kauna Be'ene, and as a matter of fact, a horn, which is actually the Oroch, is not literally a horn, but like a growth started growing over his eye as a punishment for not listening to Shmuel. Mind you, Pirush Rashbam HaIkri, I was mentioning yesterday that over here on these couple of blats, besides the regular Rashbam, as if it's not complicated enough, besides the regular Rashbam, we have Pirush Rashbam HaIkri in little print on the side over here. Which one is the real Rashbam, I don't know, but whatever. Anyway, he says that actually you shouldn't be goyis that far. Kauna didn't do anything wrong. The Gemara itself is going to say now that he had a basis for what he said. Fine, he disagreed with you. Fine. He, as a matter of fact, most of the poskim paskim like Kauna. Yeah.
Press control.
They have a responsibility to make sure that nobody
press control.
So Rashbam HaIkri says that you shouldn't be gurus this far about Kauna Be'ene. Kauna didn't do anything wrong, and even if Shmuel said to him, typically Kauna Be'ene, there's no reason that it should have happened.
Exactly,
it's a kill
left.
That's another point they say. So if you say that it happened, then it means, yes, there's a Gemara elsewhere. There's a Gemara in Shabbos where Rav tells him the same thing, typically Kauna Be'ene. So if you say, if you're gurus that it happened, it means that it took Rav and Shmuel's combined statements for it to cause it to happen. All right, okay. The Iyu Kaman Sava, new Kauna, who darshan the opposite to them, the opposite of what Shmuel said, what's his basis for it? It's the Iyu Kaman Sava, who does he hold like? The reason why we do that is because of the cheaters. Now, what are the cheaters going to do? So the Rashbam gives two possibilities. One is that they're going to wait until everybody who sells at cheaper prices has sold out their stuff. Then they're going to jack up the prices, and now everybody's going to have to come to get from them. Or, he says, the other thing is, let's say, so they sell at a more expensive price for Chachila. Everybody's going to go to the other storekeeper. He's going to claim, yeah, but I'm selling at a higher price because I have better quality, or I'm giving you larger measurements, or any other kind of ramos like that. Yeah, any kind of false advertising that he might do to justify his higher prices. So therefore, we don't want to allow that.
And the people decide. I mean,
yeah, but still, you don't want to give him a chance to.
So much of a difference between a vegetable and a vegetable.
Yeah,
who's making the decision?
There's a certain amount that you can trust the customers, but you want to make sure as much as possible that they you don't want to have that they're misled.
There's a story in Bukharis or something where the price of birds was soaring.
Not in Bukharis, in Crisis. Yeah, and Rav Shimon Gamliel makes arrangements to have it come down. Yeah. Indeed. The Yad Ramah says, by the way, the other thing. He says Mifnei Ramon is the other way around. They may charge cheaper prices and that way induce everybody to come shop by them and then start cheating them. Even for example, he'll be selling inferior quality goods without them realizing or shortchanging them or whatever, and they won't realize because they'll be, you know, new low prices, you know, like it is with used cars, you know. Yeah. So the halacha is ma'min nagadim in the sharif. Now the halacha as brought in Shulchan Aruch is not like the Yad Ramah's version about cheaper, but rather a more expensive. So the Rambam writes, for example, that if a person jacks up the prices, then yes, the agadim or based in whoever has the responsibility. They have to hit him. They have to whatever. They have to force him to lower his prices and sell at a fair price. Okay, onward. Turn it up on him. Okay, onward.
I don't know if it goes on.
Here we're talking about talking. Okay, onward. Turn it up on him. If a person goes to a store and he wants to buy a litra of meat or whatever it is, shokel a litra, then the guy should measure him out a litra. chatzi litra, shekel chatzi litra. The guy wants to buy half a litra, give him a half a litra. Well, right? Obviously, that's a revi litra, noisin lo revi litra, shekel lo revi litra. So the question is, my kamash mo'an, what's the chiddush? Of course, you give the customer what he wants. The answer is, zimetaknin maskali ad hochi. The chiddush is that you, the chiddush is you make weight like that. Now, what does that mean? The Rashbam says two possibilities. Number one, what it means is that you have to make weight down to that, down to a quarter of a litre. Below that, you can't obligate a guy to make weight smaller than that. If a person comes and says, I want to buy, for example, an eighth of a litre of meat or whatever, then the seller can say, I can't be bothered to measure you. I can't be bothered to weigh it out for you exactly and give you a hefker or whatever. It's too little. I'll guesstimate and I'll give you an eighth of a litre, for example. But a quarter, he's responsible to actually weigh it out. That's one explanation. Another explanation that Ashbam says is that what it means is that you can only make the weight in those proportions, each one being a half of the previous one. You can't, let's say, for example, decide, I'm going to make a weight of a third of a litre or a fifth of a litre, because that's too easily confused with the next size. You make a third of a litre, for example, the customer is not going to realize when you're weighing out for him, he's not going to notice it's a third instead of a half, and then he's going to get cheated or whatever, similarly with the other ones. There are other Rishonim say a similar idea, that what it means is that in proportions. It means each one has to be proportionally half of the previous one. You can't make proportions in between. And also the Rashbam Ikri also adds, it means you can't make weight smaller than that. You can't make a weight smaller than a quarter of a litre, because such a small weight may easily get knocked down or whatever off the balance, and the guy won't realize and he'll cheat. So nowadays, when they use swing scales and whatever, yeah, it's not an issue. But we're talking about when they use weights.
They use electronic scale.
Yeah, well, obviously then they. But that's the point.
That's the point.
According to that last explanation, is don't make, for example, an eighth of a litre weight. Even if the guy says, I want an eighth of a litre, don't make an eighth of a litre weight for that purpose, because such a small weight may easily get knocked off the scale and the guy won't get what he's supposed to be getting. Instead, just weigh it using coins or whatever. Yeah.
Selling you a quarter of a carrot.
Yeah.
And I'm
still
selling a third of a carrot.
All right. Turn it up. I'm done. How about another case? If a person says, I want three quarters of a litre of meat, the customer can't say, weigh out for me one quarter of a litre at a time. What do you do? Since you can't have a three-quarter litre measure, like we just said before, you can only have a half and a quarter. You can only have a whole, a half and a quarter. What you do is you put the litre weight on one side, and you put a quarter litre weight on the other side together with the meat, and that way it balances out, and you have three quarters. The point of it is that Ashbam says that what it means is we're talking about the kind of place where ein machriyin, again, the place where you're supposed to add gerumim after you do the weighing. So if he does it individually, one litre at a time, then the seller is going to be losing out. He's going to be giving him more than he should. Therefore, he can do it all at one time.
Why can't you just put in the half and then the quarter?
So the Rambam has a different understanding of this din. The Rambam says what the Gemara means to say is, don't put the half litre and the quarter litre in one pan of a scale and the meat in the other, because the quarter litre piece may get knocked out. The customer won't realize it, and then he's only getting half a litre of meat where he's supposed to get three quarters. Instead, what you do is you put the one litre on one side, the quarter litre on the other side with the meat, and that way, even if the quarter litre gets knocked out, well, then the customer is getting more than he's supposed to, but then you, the seller, the storekeeper, will realize and then fix it. Yeah. In a similar concept, as far as this business of hechra, of adding him the extra amount, if a person wants to buy 10 litre of meat or whatever, the customer can't say, weigh out for me each litre individually and then be machria for each one, because then the seller is going to be losing a lot. If you have to be machria, tefach, for each one, he stands to lose a lot. Yeah. Instead, he can weigh it all together at once, the whole 10 litre, and you have one hechra for all of them. The Rashbam also adds another detail over here, which is, the other consideration is, even if it's a place that ma'ayin, even if it's the kind of place where they do exactly even, still, inevitably, it's going to be, you can't tell when it's exactly at 180 degrees or it's 179 or whatever. So like this, you might end up losing a little bit each time, therefore you just do it all at once. Turn it up on him. So now we're going to learn a braisa that's going to talk about the sizes and proportions of scales. The scales for different purposes. Okay, so a scale basically, again, you have to think of the kind of balance scale that they had in those times. These days you don't really see them in stores anymore. These days, yeah, okay, fine. You see pictures of it all the time. But a real live one, you don't really see anymore. Okay, I don't know.
You've been in Europe a long time ago.
So a scale basically consists of the following parts. So a balance scale that we're talking about. You have a hook that it hangs from. You have that hook is attached to a fulcrum, which is what the beam of the scale goes back and forth on that. Attached to each end of the beam, you have ropes. And from the ropes, cords, strings, whatever, and from the strings hang the pans of the pans, the bowls or whatever of the scale. So the thing the beam is there's the arm across. So you can either have it hanging from a hook from the ceiling or something, or from a rope or whatever from the ceiling, or you can have it a standing one where it stands on a base on the ground. So nefesh moznayim, the nefesh of the moznayim, the Rashbam learns that the nefesh is the fulcrum. The Oruch says actually that it means the hook that the fulcrum is attached to. Anyway, that nefesh shluya ba'av or gimel tefachim, it has to be hanging at least three tefachim in the air. Meaning there has to be at least three tefachim if it's hanging from the ceiling. Let's say it has to be at least three tefachim from the ceiling to the nefesh. For the reason that we're going to say later on in the Gemara, you have to allow the scale to be able to move freely and balance and overweight and whatever. So you need enough room for it to be able to do that without hitting the ceiling.
From the ceiling to the fulcrum
has to be three tefachim. Ugvoyim in art shloisha tefachim. How do you have gravity moving? Really, you don't.
You put it on the ceiling.
It's a balance scale. So you put it on one
from
side.
From the ceiling
to the fulcrum, where the beam of the scale is
the
going back.
The room.
The ceiling of the room. Yeah. Yeah. You hang it from the ceiling by a rope.
From the ceiling of the room to the fulcrum.
Why? If you have the whole room is 6 feet tall or something, so you hang it from the ceiling and you have it's right in front of you.
And you have an effective gravitation.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure where gravity comes in. Gravity is pretty much the same everywhere in the world.
It moves in and out. It moves. It pendulums. Like a pendulum.
That's why you have to make sure that it's horizontal. That it's balanced. Yeah. Okay.
You have to trust that.
Okay, come on. Okay. Ugvoyim in order to shlosha tefachim. Also, it has to be at least three tefachim off the ground, because the other way around, you don't want the pans to be hitting the ground when you're weighing, because you need it to be able to move freely. The kono misne shloshem shneimas tefachim. The beam plus the strings that hold the pans have to be 12 tefachim. That's how the Rashbam learns that it means the total length has to be 12 tefachim. In other words, if you have, for example, the beam is 6 tefachim long, and then you have 3 tefachim here and 3 tefachim here, good, that's 12 tefachim, that's all you need. Many other Rishonim, such as the Tur and others, learn that, no, what it means is the beam has to be 12 tefachim, and each of the individual ropes that hold the pan has to be 12 tefachim. What about the Braisa didn't tell us what kind of scale we're talking about over here. We're talking on Oman Beis, what type of merchandise this first scale that we mentioned is used for. But okay. Next, how about what about scales that are used by people who sell wool or glass? They measure less at a time. They weigh out less at a time because wool you don't sell in such large batches necessarily, and glass is delicate. You're not going to weigh too many of them at once. Therefore, tloya ba'av shnei tefachim. Therefore, you only need two tefachim from the ceiling until the hook or till the fulcrum. Ugvayim in aretz shnei tefachim. It only needs to be two tefachim off the ground, not three, because it doesn't seesaw as much when you weigh things on it. The kono misnashal test tefachim, the beam and the strings of it have to be 9 tefachim. Again, according to the Rashbam, 9 tefachim total. According to the Torah, 9 tefachim each one. No, 9 tefachim across and 9. According to the Rashbam, 9 tefachim total, like that.
Right.
And according to the Torah, 9 tefachim, 9 tefachim.
So
it'd be 9 tefachim for the beam and 9 tefachim each for the ropes that hold the thing. Yeah. What about a scale that's used by a storekeeper, by a grocer, or by a balabas, a plain person in his house who occasionally sells things? Shloyba Abba Tefach, that one only has to be hanging one tefach hui from the ceiling, because again, you don't weigh as much stuff with it at a time. Ugvoyim in Arth Tefach, it only has to be one tefach off the ground. The Kona or Misna Lashisha Tfachim, the Kona and the Misna have to be six Tfachim. Again, as you're weighing smaller and smaller stuff, then you can use a smaller and smaller scale. And by the way, it's interesting that Ashbam learns over here that what it means, he says the reason it still has to be a tefach off the ground is because you need a tefach for hachra, which implies that therefore that Ashbam understands, when we said before that tzarech lachriya tefach, it seems that Ashbam understands it means the bottom, the one, the heavier pan, the one with the merchandise, has to be one tefach below where it would be when it's resting, and the other one has to be one tefach above where it's resting. So the total distance between them is two tefachim. It's two tefachim. There's one of the achronim, the Pnei Shlomo, who talks about it, who says maybe that's not what it means. Maybe it just means each one is a half a tefach from its resting position. There's a total of one tefach from one to the other. Okay. Anyway. Okay. Vishal turtani, what about a scale that's used by a turtani? Now, turtani technically is another word for a scale. But it means a scale that you, it means a turtani over here that Ashbam says means a goldsmith or a silversmith or something. They weigh things in very small quantities.
Sure.
The Rambam adds, for example, also, for example, a guy sells purple wool, things like that are sold in small quantities, and also because it's small quantities and because it's very expensive, you can't expect him to do a full tefach of achra. He wouldn't make any profit. Therefore, the achra, if you're going to be machriya, it has to be much less. In fact, the Rashbam says, in that case, all you need is achra. You need just to be visibly lower than the other one.
I'm selling a diamond, and I want to take all different.
Come on. You don't sell diamonds by weight. I've never heard of any. So, okay, maybe.
Sure,
anyway.
Of course.
Okay, maybe. Yeah. Okay. Fine. But anyway, the point is, all you need is a tiny bit of achra, then just enough that it visibly looks lower than the other one. So, a turtani, then, which is a very small scale, Tzloya Ba'ava Sholosh Ha'aroi. What? It only needs to be hanging three etzboys from the ceiling. It needs to be at least three etzboys off the ground. Because again, you don't need very much achra, and it doesn't swing very much when you're weighing on it to begin with. How much the kona and the misna have to be in such a scale, I don't know. Some of the Rishonim learn that he means I don't know, in the sense they can be as long or as short as you want them. The Rambam, for example, learns that way. Others of them say it means there is supposed to be a length, but the Tanya of this writer didn't know what it was. Okay, so the question is, okay, so we mentioned scales that are used by wool dealers and glass dealers and by storekeepers and balabatim and by goldsmiths. The first scale that we mentioned, the largest one of all, three tefachim from the ceiling and three tefachim off the floor, etc. What's that one used for? I'm going to pop a digrumi. That's the kind of scale that's used by copper and by coppersmiths, ironsmiths, blacksmiths, whatever, or scrap metal dealers or whatever. They weigh huge amounts of metal at one time, so their scales swing a lot, and they can be weighing hundreds of pounds of metal at a time. Therefore you need a very large scale in order that the hechra tefach will actually mean something. The same thing that we're saying as far as the Isser, that you're not allowed to use a scale that doesn't meet those criteria that we said, the same thing goes as far as Tuma. What does that mean? The Rashbam says it means if you have a scale that's not made in these proportions, since you're not allowed to play with it, it's also not considered a Keli as far as being a Kabbal Tuma. Tosfos says that's not what it means. Because the fact is, for example, at least the pants. No, but a scale that's meant, for example, for scrap metal dealers, we said has to be a certain size. A scale that's used by storekeepers has to be a different size. The Rashbam is saying, for example, if a storekeeper were to make a smaller scale than that, then he wouldn't be allowed to use it, because not according to the proportions that we said, it won't make fair weights, and therefore it's not considered a keli as far as Tumah. Tosfos says that's not what it means, because, for example, at the very least, okay, the pans of the scale are something, are a kli kibbul, they're something that can contain something. If they were separate from the rest of the scale, you'd be able to use them for holding liquid or whatever. Why shouldn't they be mekabel tumah? So Tosfos says, no, what we're talking about is like this. If you have a scale that's properly made, then you have the concept of a yad, meaning we have the nehilchos tumah v'tara. You can have, for example, something, you can have, let's say, an apple is mekabel tumah once it becomes wet. What if something touches the stem of the apple? The apple can also become tummy from it. That's called a yad. It's called like a handle that you use to hold on to the apple. You have similar concepts as far as kelim. We've talked about it in the here and there, yeah. So here, the idea is if the scale is properly made, then all of it is considered a yad. So for example, if something tameh were to touch the beam or the ropes or whatever, then the whole thing would be makabel tuma. As opposed to if it wasn't a properly made scale, only if it touched the actual pieces themselves that are makabel tuma, the metal pieces or the bowls or whatever, would they be makabel tuma, but the rest of it would not. The Rambam seems to have yet another explanation, by the way, that it means, for example, we said, let's say that with a scrap metal dealer's thing, the it has to be hanging 3 tefachim from the ceiling. It means only those 3 tefachim are the yad. And if you made it hanging 4 tefachim from the ceiling, the extra tefach wouldn't be a yad because it's not necessary. So if Tumah touched that top tefach of the rope, for example, it wouldn't be makabel Tumah. As opposed to if it touched the bottom 3, then it would be. Okay. This is my Tamash Malon. What's your Mani Bapatish's Chiddush in that? Tanena. We explicitly learn a Mishnah to that effect in the Sefer Kevin. Chut Moznaim Shochen Mini Vishabala Batin Tepach. That the strings for the scale of a storekeeper or a Balabatim is a Tepach, which is just what we said before. Kano Mishnah. So what's his Chiddush? Yeah, but the Mishnah is saying over there that a Tepach is what's necessary. The answer is, yeah, but Kanu Misnishalite Tirichala, yes, but Ramani Bapatish's Chiddush is the same thing applies to the other measurements we mentioned, the size of the beam, the size of the strings that hold up the pans, Zaloitanan. Not a tepach. We said by Chenmini and Balabatim, we said that it has to be the Kanu Misnishalite 6 Tvachim. But that doesn't say in the Mishnah in Caleb. So that's the detail that Ramani Bapatish wanted to tell us. Not just the fact that it hangs a tefach from the ceiling, which that you know from the Mishnah and Kalim, that only that tefach is a yad or whatever, but all the other details that we mentioned are also significant as far as Tumah B'Tahar. Yeah. Turn it up. That's what he says. That's what Ramani Bapatish is saying. That's the Chiddush. We didn't say in the Mishnah what the size of the beam is, what the size of the strings are, but Ramani Bapatish is telling us, given that we had a Braisa that tells us those details as far as the dinim of Mecha Homecha, you should know the same dinim applies as far as Tumah B'Tahar. Again, according to the Rashbam, that if the scale is not made like that, it's not a Keli at all, or according to Tosfos and everybody else, that it's only considered one big Keli when it's made according to these specifications. Turn it up on him. You're not allowed to make the measuring stones, the measuring weights themselves. You're not allowed to make them out of tin, veloishal avar or lead, veloishal gisterin or of an alloy of metals, veloishal shamanimacha, so in general of any kind of metal. Avar also shall tsunma veshal schokas, but you can make them out of hard stone or out of glass. The Rambam also adds you can make them out of onyx, for example. Now why can't you make it out of metal? So the Rashbam explains because metal gradually wears away. So then eventually you're going to have a weight that, for example, is supposed to be a litra, and now it doesn't weigh a litra, which would be a dishonest weight. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says it's not a matter of that they wear away. It's a matter of you use them to weigh things like meat and whatever. Like we said before, sometimes you have to put a weight in together with the meat on one side of the scale. So then fat and meat, it's fat and then liquid and whatever from it sticks to them. It makes them heavier. So then it creates problems of its own. Therefore, as opposed to smooth rock or glass or whatever, it's easy enough to wipe them off. Nothing's going to stick to them permanently. Tosfos also goes on to say that actually ones that you use, for example, gold and silversmiths, are allowed to use metal weights. There's less of a problem of them wearing away. However, Tosfos goes on to say, based on other Gemaras, you do have to keep them in leather cases when you're not using them, because otherwise, again, they'll wear away. Now let's talk about, we said in the Mishnah that sometimes in some places the minhag was that they sold with goydesh, they sold heaping measures, and in some places they sold flat ones. Even when it's flat, still, the usual way of doing it wasn't, apparently it wasn't like nowadays where when you're measuring that flour for challah or whatever, you take the container and dip it into the flour. Apparently the minhag in those days was that you pour the material into the container from the top, so it makes a heap. Well, if it's in a place where the minhag is to flatten it, you need something to flatten it out with. You had a stick to flatten it out with. That stick is called a machak. So, ein oisin ha-machak shel dlas. You can't make the machak made out of a piece of a peel of a pumpkin. Mepnei shehu kal, because that's too light. So it's not going to go in properly. It's not going to do a proper mechika. You're going to still end up with a bit of a heap on top, and it's not fair to the seller. You're also not allowed to make it out of metal because then it'll be too heavy. It'll take too much out. It'll curve it in, kind of, yeah. Actually, the Rimi Gash says it's not even that. He says that what it is a metal one will push down. It'll make it too tight, in other words, and therefore it comes out. Also, you're selling more than you should have to for the, like this, for example, you sell flour, let's say, usually it's fairly loose in the container. If you use a metal one, it's going to push it down. It's going to come out. It's going to compress it. So you're going to end up selling him more flour than he's supposed to be getting.
And the pumpkin
you'll also give him too much because it'll be sticking out on top. So one way or the other, you're going to be giving him too much.
It's so light, it's not going to knock it down too much.
No, but it's also going to leave a heap. It's not going to make a smooth top. It's going to make a convex top.
And the powder will be pressed in.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So instead, what you do is you make the machak out of olive wood, or wood from, or walnut wood, or shikma wood, or box wood. All of those are average weight stuff. So they'll do a proper machika. Not too heavy to press it down, and not too light to still leave it. Yeah. Okay. Turn it up, you're also not allowed to make a machat that one side of it is thick and one side of it is thin, because the thin side is going to do more of a mechika, the thick side is not. So what's going to happen? The Rashbam says you'll end up using the thick side. You'll end up using the thick side when you're buying, the thin side when you're selling, and therefore you're going to be cheating.
And so yeah.
So you have to make your machak has to be the same. Also, you should not do, when you do the mechika, don't just do it in one sweep.
I think you mean concave and convex.
That could also be, yeah. Okay, I don't know. That's not, okay. All right, whatever. Yeah, it has to be straight, yeah. Okay. You should not do the mechika all at once, because then it doesn't do a proper mechika. You leave too much on it. Because if you do it all at once, then it's bad for the seller, because like you're taking off too little, and therefore the seller ends up selling more than he's supposed to. It's good for the buyer. On the other hand, you shouldn't do it a little bit by a little bit, because then it presses in too much. Then it's the other way around. You're cheating the buyer, because then more is being taken out than there should be. So you do it either, the Rashbam says you do it one time gently, not quickly, but you do it one time gently, or you do, let's say, two times. You do, let's say, from one end to here, and then from the other end to here.
Sonny, for a barrel, we accept three tipas. We don't force the seller.
Because you can't expect
it. It has to be exactly the...
As much as possible. You have to be exact.
Why
but
is that?
Because the difference is here, it takes what, a couple of extra seconds to do this. There, what are you going to sit and then wait till all the liquid drains out of you? You'll be there all night.
Being exact.
Yeah. So then you have to. It'll take a couple of seconds as opposed to over there. It can take hours for it to all drain out. Okay. I'll call on Omer Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai. So an interesting thing. Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai says about all these kinds of short practices that we're talking about, making a machak that's not the right shape or the wrong material or all these different things about what weights should and shouldn't be made out of. Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai says about all this. Oilim oimar, oilim loy oimar. Woe to me if I say it, woe to me if I don't say it. Why? Oilim loy oilim oimar. Woe to me if I say it. Im oimar, it's bad if I say it. Shema yumal diram haramoyin, because cheaters may learn from this. Hey, we never knew of this short practice. Now what the chacham are saying? Hey, this is a good idea. We should try it. On the other hand, if I don't say it, the people who are already cheating may say that, look, hey, the Chachamim don't even know what we're doing. We can just do whatever we want. Or Marshall says they might think, you know why the Chachamim don't cheat people? Because they're not smart enough to know how to cheat people. We're the smart guys. We know, yeah. So what's the bottom line? Rabbi Yechim Zakkai isn't sure whether to teach these dinim or not. Did he end up teaching them or not? The answer is Omer of Shmuel Bayitzchak. No, because the fact is, these are dinim. You have to teach business people also. They have to know what to do and what not to do. Omer of Shmuel Bayitzchak, Omra. Yes, he did in the end teach it. Umayhai Kro Omra. And he did it on the basis of the following pasuk. Ki Yeshorim Darchei Hashem. The ways of Hashem are straight. The tzaddikim yelchubam, tzaddikim following them. So the tzaddikim will learn from what the chacham say, be careful not to cheat a person even to the nth degree. Or push him yukash lebam, and the sinners will stumble on them. Fine, the sinners will learn from it to do the wrong thing. That's not our problem. We have a responsibility to teach the people what the din is and that they should do the right thing. If dishonest people learn from it, not our problem. The pasuk says you should not do injustice in mishpat. Mishpat over here doesn't mean Rashi mentions that on the pasuk. Also, it doesn't mean justice in Beis Din, because they have earlier psukim in Parshas Kedoshim that talk about it. It means when you're judging as far as measuring, you're measuring, it's like a mini judgment, how much to give him. Vamida vamishkol vamasura. It says you shouldn't be dishonest in mida, which means in measurement, vamishkol in weight, or vamasura. And masura means liquid measuring. Vamida zumadidis karaka. The word midah means when you're measuring land. We learned this in Bava Metzia also. It means don't measure for one person in the summer and the other one in the winter, because the measuring rope gets longer in the winter. It absorbs water. It swells up. In the summer, it dries out. The Rashbam also brings from Rabbeinu Hananel another reason. The ground itself is swelled, cracks open in the summer. So therefore, if you measure in the summer, it comes out. You're measuring the space of the cracks as well. Therefore, it's unfair to one guy. Yeah. That's Medidah. Yeah. The Mishko, what does it mean you have to be honest in measure, in weighing? Shalai Yakman Mishkalois Melach, besides all the details that we said before, it also means you shouldn't bury your weights in salt. Why not? What's the problem putting them in salt? Rashbam says it means it'll make them heavier, because it'll make them absorb moisture from the air, whatever it is. Tosfos and also the Rambam learn the other way around. On the contrary, it makes them lighter. It makes them lighter because it draws out liquid or whatever it is from them and makes them lighter. Okay, whatever it is.
They're not metal, these measurements.
I mean, yeah, we said they're stone, but even so, stone. I guess still.
Different physics.
Yeah.
The physics
is
metal.
Yeah. Okay. And when it says you have to be honest, the masura means you can't make the liquid foam up. When you're pouring wine or oil or whatever it is, make sure that you pour it gently so you don't have a lot of, so you're not selling the guy a lot of bubbles.
Like beer or soda or whatever.
Yeah. The kavachon. And we can make a kavachomer. Okay. And we can make a kavachomer over here. Which besides mesura means the general thing, it means liquid measure. It's also the name of a specific measurement, which is 1/36 of a lug. Now, a lug is about a revius is about 3-4 ounces. So a lug is about 12 or 16 ounces. This is 1/36 of that. So you're talking something like a third of an ounce or a half of an ounce.
And 1/36 of what?
Of a lug. And even that, Hikpida Olav Torah. Even that, the Torah is saying, don't even be martiach with that, even though it's a small amount. The extra, how much is going to be the extra foam if you're measuring out into a masura and it foams up a little bit? How much is going to be the difference already? It's going to be not even a shavu kruta, and still the Torah is makbid on it, because which actually Tosfos talks about. So it's a matter of gezel anyway. So Tosfos says that the point is, even as soon as you make it foam, even before you took the money from the guy, you're already over on lo sigzel. The Minchas Chinuch says a different thing also, that it means that even though usually Gzela is only a Shavu Prutah, here the Torah is Machbid and calls it also even if it's less than a Shavu Prutah.
Sure, then the cappuccino isn't it? You have a problem.
I guess so. Hikpid all of Torah. Kavachoymer lehin v'chatsi ahin, v'shlishas ahin, v'reviyas ahin, v'lug v'chatsi lug, v'reviyas v'chatsi tumen v'uchla, all these different liquid measurements, which we'll learn more about tomorrow, that you have to be, how much more so, you have to be careful with them when you're pouring the liquid, make sure it doesn't foam. Because you see, even a masura, you have to be careful how much more so larger measure.
Then you put a little salt on it.
Salt doesn't really help. They say that milk helps. They say that milk helps a little bit. I don't know. Sometimes though, you put your finger in it also helps a little. Although if you're pouring somebody beer, it's probably not a good idea to put your finger in it. All right, onward. All right, so we continue.